So good morning. I am happy to be with all of you this morning, especially since I had to miss last Sunday with you. Pastor Larry jumped in for me on short notice last week and did a phenomenal job, and I really appreciate that. Yeah, you can put your hands together for that. Linda and I went to visit my mom in California, and I got the flu.
For Armageddon.
And I literally got the flu and could not get on a plane to come home. And then Linda came home Tuesday, but my brother Joe, who lives with my mom, my oldest brother, and who cares for my mom, he got the flu and it put him in the hospital. So I stayed because my mom is real forgetful now and she can't be alone. She can't live alone. And so then he was in the hospital. So then Linda came home Tuesday, and then I just finally got home Friday. We had a really weird week and a half. I was with my mom or my brother four times at the emergency room while we were out there. Just a very fragile situation. But anyway, ironically, all of us, myself, Linda got the flu after she got home. My sister who visited us, she lives an hour from my mom. She is still terribly sick. My brother ended up in the hospital, and my 92-year-old mom did not get the flu. So I wasn't sure I was coming home this weekend, so I'm especially be grateful to be with my LifeSpring family this morning. And I just want to say I appreciate all your prayers. And this is a really confusing season for my mom. She's losing her grip on reality pretty quickly. But I got to spend some really precious time with her. She doesn't always know whether I'm her son or one of her other brothers or one of her other kids or whether I'm her brother or my dad, you know, at this point. But on Wednesday, I took her for a walk by the ocean. That's my mom, Mary. And she lives 15 minutes from the ocean, but she hadn't been there in years. And I took her for a walk by the ocean, and she asked me, she said, "Now, what do they call this big water thing?" I said, "That's the ocean." And she loved it. And then we watched the surfers for about a half hour, and she was just mesmerized. Watching the surfers out at West Cliff Drive in Santa Cruz. So anyway, I just really wanted to show you a picture of my mom because I'm grateful for her. So now I'm sure you've probably heard that your leadership team here at LifeSpring has decided this year to cancel the spring offering that we usually do around Easter time. And it's not because we don't have any needs as a church, but because as we talked about our real needs as a church, we became convinced that all we really need to do at LifeSpring is to live fully into the story of God in our midst. Because you can get hung up sometimes on the wrong things, and you can say, "Oh, we got to solve this money problem, or we got to solve this practical problem." If every one of us who really calls this beautiful church home grasped God really doing his thing in our midst, and we saw the wonder of it, what would happen is we'd just give our hearts to his mission and everything else, like the money, that would all just simply follow. I mean, that's the truth. That is the truth. So we decided no offering, that instead we would tell you a story beginning in 1992 when Linda and I came here to Plainfield and bringing you up to the present moment and really what is the wonder of the call of God upon our church community at this moment. If you missed episode one, you'll want to watch that. It's on the website at yourlifespring.org. Just click on the "This Is Us" link, because that's what we're calling this whole story, "This Is Us," there it is, and you'll see that video, and you can watch episode one. And, you know, so while I was gone preparing for this second week of this, because this is what we're doing, is we're telling you this story with just a little preaching, but we're telling you this story over a 5 or 6 week period. And while I was gone last Sunday afternoon, a bunch of folks from church here who have been a part of this church community for a long time got together and they shot a bunch of video and told a bunch of stories that go back to those early days of how they came to the church and some of them how they came to Jesus. And when it came down to editing, there were parts that they shot a lot of video. There were parts that we just couldn't leave out. So the episode you're going to see this morning is a little longer. It's probably going to be the longest of the 5 or 6 of these. But I don't think you're going to mind. It doesn't feel long when you watch it because it's stories. But so just think of it as a little more video and a little less sermon today. How's that? But before we watch it, Michael is going to go back and fill in the next couple spots on our timeline. This is something we're doing every week so that when we get down to about the week or so before Easter, you're going to be able to look up on this wall and kind of see a rough outline of the what is kind of the wild, crazy journey of LifeSpring Church And yeah, I don't know if Michael has his OSHA certification or any of that. So the one he's putting up there from 1997, you're going to hear a little bit of that story today, actually. Like a little walk through the years, and you're going to get taken back. I think you're in for a treat, really. If you've only come to LifeSpring in the last few years, I think you're in for a treat this morning, because you're going to hear stories you've never heard, and you're going to hear about people you've never heard about, and you're going to get this glimpse back into something that was going on with the birthing of this church community and its journey across the years from long before your time. And I'm hoping that you're going to enjoy it, so here you are. I hope you enjoy episode 2.
I was 32 years old when we started the church. I always say now that when we started the church, I thought I knew the answers. But looking back, I didn't actually know the questions. Our original name was Cornerstone Community Church. I've often said that if I was God, and we're all glad I'm not, and 32-year-old Fran Lehman came to me and said, "I want to start a church," I would have said, "Absolutely not." But God's answer was, "Okay, sure, let's do it." And my joke across these years has been that maybe God wasn't letting me start a church for a bunch of other people. Maybe he just knew it was the best way to grow me.
Vision. By the time we came to Plainfield, the church we came from had embraced some really unhealthy charismatic theology, and it was kind of an experience-chasing church, and if non-Christians visited the church within the first 5 minutes of the worship service, they'd be running for the door because it was too weird.
But you had started thinking about knowing God more deeply.
Exactly. You know, by this time, we had really realized that legalism and chasing charismatic experiences, that these don't really change people. Jesus and the apostles talked about being changed deeply on the inside by the love of God.
So how did you define the vision for Cornerstone?
Reactively, very reactively. We basically looked at the church we were a part of and said, not like that. I guess we just tried to be a church of nice people where someone might find Jesus.
How did that work out?
Well, eventually, not so well. You need more of a vision than that. But despite that fact, in the meantime, all these beautiful friendships formed in the church, and all these great things began to happen in people's lives.
So one of the things about being a mobile church, which we were for 17 years, and I think I was part of it for about 11 of those 17 years, is every Sunday, meeting in the different schools, we had to bring a trailer, haul in about 10,000 pounds of equipment, and then set it all up. And then at the end of the service, we would pack everything back into the trailers and back it would go into storage. And we did that every weekend for 17 years. So if you think about that, it's almost 1,000 times of us unloading, loading the trailer every single Sunday. In the winter, especially challenging with the snow and the ice and just everything being cold, we would bring the sound cart into the sanctuary, and we'd have to wait for about a half an hour for it to warm up so we didn't turn it on and fry all the electronics. A lot of times things weren't working. We had to troubleshoot on the fly. There were many technical difficulties we experienced during those years.
But there was a time when Fran was pulling a trailer with signs on it that we used to put up on Sunday morning. One of those signs flew off the trailer, flew through the air. Fortunately, no one was hurt, but it did almost take out a poor young lady in her car. Those were some of the challenges of Church in a Box when we did that all those years ago.
So we were church shopping in 1999, and the school at Walker's Grove was on my wife's at the time, on her way to work. And she said, well, why don't we try this one? And so we went there on a Sunday. I think it was in August, it was sometime in the summer. And Fran was wearing shorts that Sunday, which I don't think anybody has seen since. So, you know, make of that what you will. But when we left that day, we had been church shopping for several weeks or months and had been to several churches. And just, I remember leaving the church or the school that Sunday, and we just kind of looked at each other and said, yep, this is the place for us.
We've served this church, held a lot of babies. We were called, known as the baby borrowers. We held all the babies for all the new moms so they could enjoy the church service. I've done the books for the church. I did that for 17 years of the years that we've been here. And just try and help out. We serve communion. Not too good on the greeting part of it. It's not my thing, but just about anything else that comes up in church that we like to help with.
Yeah, this church is a real deal. The love for Jesus is there. The love amongst the members is there. There wasn't any secret squirrel stuff going on or lists that you have to sign saying you're not going to do or you will do these things. We've come to know this church as our family.
So I grew up Methodist and my wife grew up Catholic. And right after we were married, we were church shopping. And we found LifeSpring. Well, maybe it was Cornerstone back then. But really a lot of what we did was ask questions. I asked questions about her Catholic upbringing and asked why she believed certain things. And I think that really got her to thinking. And I think for both of us, Cornerstone, now LifeSpring, has made us a thinking people, a thinking follower of Jesus, where before both of us were just going through the motions. It was church is what we did on a Sunday. And we've been here for almost 25 years.
And we went to our first service, and I was absolutely sold on it. You want to talk about Pastor Fran? When we first saw that it was Pastor Fran, we thought there was a chance it might be a female pastor.
And we were a little like
oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, we were kind of like, what do we expect? Yeah. What if it is a girl? Like, how do we feel about that? Let's try it out, you know, maybe people like it.
I remember
kind of like elbowed Scotty and was like, look at this guy. He's got like Birkenstock sandals on and he has like cargo shorts and he was wearing this like shirt and it was like a little bit unbuttoned, so like his chest hair was like coming out a little bit. I was kind of like, ugh, I don't know if we're gonna make it here. Sure enough, like it's the same guy who ends up doing the sermon. He's introduced himself as Pastor Fran, and so we were kind of like,
oh, it's not a girl.
Okay.
It's a guy in cargo shorts. And I kept telling Kristen that the pastors that I had heard growing up were reading their Bible upside down. Like, if they actually got into the gospel and read the gospel, they would see that it's a lot different than the way they've been preaching it. So after that first service, we got back in the car, and I was like, we could just cross off the other four churches. We're done looking. This is the one we're going to be at. And Kristen was just staring at me. And I was like, what's wrong? And she's like, how many times have you been here? And I said, I've never been here before. And she said, you mean all those times that you're going on a long run, you're actually going on a long run, you're not going to church? I was like, I've never been here before. And she says, do you know that Pastor Fran? And I said, I've never met him before in my life, I promise. And she said, well, if you've never met him before, then you and him are going to be really good friends. So we ended up being really good friends. Years later.
As I know a lot of people always say, when I first started going to what was then Cornerstone, Fran would preach, and it was like he was looking inside my soul and speaking to exactly the things that I needed to hear every single week. Like, to the point where sometimes I thought, is he reading something about me that I didn't put somewhere that somehow he knows? And that was the first time I kind of felt like God is speaking to me through Fran and talking about the exact things that I need to hear. And that made me want to continue to come to hear what else God had to say to me.
I guess the whole, for me, the whole journey with God kicked off. It started with my father, let's get that straight, with him being a man of God, but more in action, not so much in words. And the seed was planted, and it's dormant for a while until I was later older, in my 20s. I was in the Air Force, and in Desert Storm kind of time frame. And, we're out in the desert for 100 days at a shot. And I remember a friend who was a Southern Baptist he had the courage to turn to some of us guys and actually say, hey, if you guys aren't doing anything, I'm going to have a little study. What kind of study? Bible study. This is the early 90s, and I had made a shift in life, leaving the Air Force and going into the civilian side of flying. Had about a 10-month break between those two venues, and it was a time when God used, let's just say, he used that time to make it evident that he wanted me to follow him in ways that that I needed to go.
And then he started going to all of these, he didn't tell me that, but he was going to all these churches and experiences. And I was, when he finally told me about it, I was kind of freaked out because I thought, we're Catholic. This is the journey we're on. And where are all these weirdo places you're going to, and who are you turning into? Because you're not the guy I married. But eventually, through a lot of him talking to me and us working through it, I decided to kind of open my heart to trying this, because I thought God was, big and there, but not in my life, not really part of my life. So we went to Cornerstone the first time, and I was floored by the way that Fran spoke about Jesus, because I'd never heard anybody talk about Jesus that way. And through the process of coming to church and reading the Bible and talking to Larry, Jesus started to become more in my life, a greater presence in my life, and started to be, I just fell in love with him.
So there's these idyllic first few years, things are joyful and peaceful, and then the first struggle happens. What was that?
Well, that phrase, nature abhors a vacuum. So that's what we had. We had a vacuum of vision, of identity. We were this nice little church, but there wasn't really, we couldn't really say this is what we're about as a church, not very specifically anyway.
So what happened then?
Well, there were some guys who came into the church, from different places, and they were all guys who had been Christians for a long time, and each of them thought they knew exactly what the church should be all about. And you have to remember that I was young, I was in my 30s, and so I think these guys subconsciously kind of saw me as young and malleable, someone that they could push and shape this way and that.
And what did they want to shape you or the church into?
Well, there was one guy who was just really into the idea of sheer Bible knowledge. So he really pushed hard in our church this idea that if you just knew the Bible enough, that would automatically make you a good Christian. Then there was another guy who was all about foreign missions. He just had really gotten the foreign missions bug, and he just thought that Cornerstone should be all about missions, and that the only reason people would even come to church on Sunday is so they could support missionaries. And then there was another guy who was hyper-Calvinist, if you have any idea what that is, and he was just really excited about the fact that God didn't love everybody in a saving way, and that Jesus only died for the elect, and he wanted everybody to just really grasp what he thought of as these great truths. And so, these guys pushed the church this way and that with those different ideas. The result of all this is that I felt pushed and pulled in all these different directions. I didn't want to lose any of these people, but I also couldn't make multiple different things the main thing.
So what did you do?
Well, it made clear to me that, you know, we didn't know who we were as a church. Other than I still was hanging on to that truth that God is after the heart, you know, not the outside stuff. So I realized if we didn't find a vision to hang our hat on, people were going to eat me alive. I mean, if you think about it, it's just like life. If you don't know who you are, somebody will be happy to tell you. So about that time, Rick Warren came out with this book called The Purpose-Driven Church. And to be honest, it wasn't a deep book. But we were a church in search of a vision. And what Rick Warren said in this book is, the church is not just about one thing, which is what all these people were trying to tell me. He said the church is about five things, like worship and fellowship, evangelism, etc. And so I kind of grabbed onto that, and I said, we need a vision. And I said, this is it. This is going to be our model.
So what happened to those guys with their own agendas?
Well, they all left the church. You know, a lot of times Christians are just like everybody else. If we don't get what we want, we take our ball and go home.
But that kind of stabilized things as a church?
It did. That was really our first big crisis as a church, and our first big shift. And, you know, after that, we found some good ways of talking about what to focus on as a church, and we did some growing numerically, which was great. And so it did kind of stabilize things, and I kind of thought, well, this is who we'll be now, forever, from here on out. What I couldn't see is that eventually there was an earthquake coming. And that's the thing. You never can see an earthquake coming.
So that...
It's okay.
I flubbed the first
it's
one.
Okay.
So there are these... Oh my gosh.
These are the outtakes again. Okay.
So there's these...
It's like that Liberty Mutual commercial where the guy goes, Liberty Bibberty.
Yeah. Okay, so all we did was I Googled churches. We had one boy, young boy, and one on the way.
No, I wasn't pregnant.
Are you sure you weren't pregnant?
I'm absolutely positive.
Well, it all started back... Is that too slow? All right, start over. Ready?
Hang on a second. All right, now go.
Well, if you've been around this church as long as I have, that look back is just, it just makes you feel so many different things. So working on these videos has taken us through stacks of old photos from the early days of our church community. And it's made me acutely aware that if you're one of the many people who has come into this community in the last few years and loved what you have found here, you've come into that with almost no awareness of all of the people who have given you the gift of this community. Names that most of you won't even know. People like the Andersons and the Jewels and the Steckenriders and the Swansons and the Bisestos and the McCluskeys and people like John McCann and Lala Para, all these people from years gone by who gave their hearts to the existence of this church all those years ago. And of course, some of those folks, as you just saw in the video, along with other people like James and Sandra back here and a bunch of people you saw there, are still here, still serving, still giving shape to this church community. And across all those years, those people with Linda and I were wrestling with this question. You might not have seen it if you showed up on a Sunday morning, but it was always there. Who will we be as a church? Who are we becoming? And you're going to see as these 6 weeks unfold that the answer to that has become more and more specific and more profound. Much of the difficulty in answering the question, who will we be, is that we've been conditioned to answer that question by a million other things, by a million other expectations that are always around us. And here's the thing. This is the same question we face personally. We've been asking this question, you know, saying that across these years, as a church, we said who we will be. But really, this is the same question that you and I face personally. Who will we be? And if you don't know who you are, really someone will be happy to tell you. In fact, they've been telling you your whole life. But do they know? Do you know? And just because you think you know who you are doesn't mean it's true. Who are you, really? Who will you be? Almost always the world will give you shallow answers to this question. It's a little passage in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15, where John says this, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away. But he who does the will of God abides forever." I always used to get hung up reading that passage because when John says, don't love the world or the things in the world, I used to think, but the world is pretty cool. And it took me decades to realize John's not talking about the creation. He's not saying don't love a sunny day that gives you hope for spring. He's not saying don't love a nice evening of laughing and sharing a meal with your friends. He's not saying don't enjoy a walk in the woods. He's not saying not to enjoy the creation. When John uses the world, the phrase the world, he means something very, very specific, which is the misguided way that people in the world have come to define life and find their own sense of value, of worth, of what it's about. He says, don't love that, because it's not rooted in the love of the Father. It's rooted in a million other voices. Now, sadly, religion, even what goes under the name of Christianity, will almost always give you shallow answers to that question about, you know, what will you be? What should you be? We've taken Jesus and we've made him into rules for good behavior. We've made him into politics. We've turned Jesus into the new version of the morality police. Rather than what Jesus said he was, which is the restorer of the human heart. The restorer of the human person. The Pharisees thought they knew who they were. That's interesting to wonder about, isn't it? They were sure. They were sure they had God all figured out and they knew exactly who they were. And since God was the morality police and God was the great harsh judge of the world, and since God was for us, which in their case was Israel, and against the rest of the world, which in that case was the Gentiles, then they concluded that they ought to be judgmental morality police, and that they positioned themselves as we are the ones who matter, and God doesn't love everybody else. And so they thought they knew who they were, but they were wrong. The Apostle Paul, before he met Christ, thought he knew who he was. And they did this with religion. That's very important for us to understand. Don't think that just because somebody waves a Bible around, or they quote scripture, or they use the name of Jesus even, they have a good bead on God or a good bead on what a human being is and what they really are and what they were made to be. Because it's not necessarily true. I'll tell you that I think most of what we call Christianity in America at this very moment is horribly misguided. And it makes me sad because it makes me think, well, how do you turn that ship around if we've defined Jesus in all these ways that don't seem like Jesus when I read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? In that passage I just read from 1 John, Jesus says that all these answers hanging in the air around you to the question of what you will be, that these answers come not from the Father, Jesus says. They come from the world, from these thousand other voices. Jesus came to answer the question of your existence. You got to get that. If you're just looking for a Jesus who's going to tell you one more rule to keep, or just lecture you about how you're supposed to be, you're going to miss it. Jesus came to answer the question of the meaning of your existence down to the core of your being, what it means to be a human being and where you can find real life. There's a passage in Isaiah that I have long loved. Is it Isaiah? No, in Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 2, where the Lord says, my people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water. You know this one, don't you, Mindy? They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, right? There's the spring of living water. This is where you find life. This is where you find what will quench your soul. And he says they've walked right by it. And then here's the second sin. And they have dug for themselves broken cisterns, which cannot hold water. That's the thousand other voices. That's the thousand other questions. That's the way the world around you is telling you what life is and what you ought to try and be, how you ought to define your existence. If you don't want the answer about your existence that Jesus gives, all there really is left to do with Jesus is to refashion him into another set of rules, some more religion, some more politics. But the answer he gives is that you are the light of the world, that you are the beloved of the Father, that you are loved, as William Paul Young reminded us recently, with a relentless affection. And this really is good news because it means that you don't have to be good enough. You don't have to be successful enough. You don't have to be perfect enough. You don't have to be on the right side of the political divide. You don't have to be religious enough. Whatever your ugliness has been, and we have all had some, you are loved by a God who will bear that ugliness in himself every time. So great is his love for you. He will bear your ugliness every time to the point of being nailed down to a cross, all because what he really wants is for you to awaken from your amnesia and know who you really are as defined by him, because he made you, because he gave you life. When we get to Easter, do you know what we hear Jesus say? Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. Now listen to this. I do not give to you as the world gives. Oh, Lord, have mercy right there. I do not give to you as the world gives. So do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid. Do you hear it? Jesus is saying, I am going to set your whole being on a different basis of identity and love. And that really is the Lenten question. If you're new to our church, it might be weird to walk into an evangelical-ish type church with choruses and electric guitars and laughter and then have somebody say, oh yeah, and Lent, because I know a lot of us kind of think, well, isn't that like a super traditional church thing or a thing I left behind with my Catholic or Lutheran or you know, Anglican upbringing? But we do Lent around here because spiritual journeys matter. And that is the Lenten question. Does anyone remember that we stand on the brink of the Lenten season, which starts this Wednesday with Ash Wednesday? So I know you heard it in the announcement, 7 p.m. Wednesday night, come, be here. Does anyone remember what the word Lent means? Anybody? It's a surprising answer. It comes from an old English word, lengthen. It means the lengthening of days. It's actually a reference to springtime, which when you've grown up in church and you've had Lent as this sort of heavy idea, when someone tells you that Lent essentially means springtime, you go, seriously? We sometimes think of Lent as a heavy time because it is a season of reflection. But if there is a darkness or heaviness to Lent, it's the darkness from which the Lord is seeking to extract us. It is the darkness of all those other answers of how you need to perform well enough, how you need to somehow measure up, or that the best you can do is cram the right possessions into your soul to simulate actually being alive. You realize that's what everybody's doing, right? That's kind of the modern Western culture game, is that everybody is desperate to feel alive. I just watch every commercial. Every commercial is promising you life and love, and this is where you're going to find it. And so everybody is rightly, in a dark world, is rightly longing. Where do we find it? Where do we find the life? And then the answer we're given is just take these things and cram them in your soul. And they don't tell you this, but this is the truth. And for a moment, you will feel alive. And so we just keep repeating that cycle. But what Jesus wants to bring you into is the warm sunshine and the green grass of knowing your own value as the Father's own, free from all those other voices which have sought to tell you who you are, even your own voice. He wants to free you from having to fish in the shallow waters of the world for your identity. Jesus said this, John 8:36, so if the Son sets you free, free from what? Free from all of that. free from everybody else telling you this is what life is, this is who you are. Remember the question, who will we be? If the sun sets you free, you will be free indeed. But we live in a noisy age. Are you aware of that? My gosh, do we live in a noisy age. And then we got the internet. It was noisy before. And then we got the internet, I didn't bring my phone in here. I was going to use it as a prop. So now we have the internet, and so if the noise in our heads abates for 5 seconds, we go, well, you know, what's the chatter? What's the noise? What's the thing? And it's noisy in here in our heads. And this is the value of Lent. This is my Lent commercial. You ready? This is the value of Lent. That we might quiet ourselves just a little bit more than we usually do. To just be still and let the Lord bring up to the surface in us the many places that we have rooted our false sense of self. See, when you're not quiet and you're caught up in the noise, the busyness and all of that, you're actually about every 10 seconds, I'd say, in this culture, probably touching base with one of the places your false sense of self is actually rooted, and you're just bouncing kind of from thing to thing. But when you get quiet, and in that quietness you say to the Lord, so who am I, Lord? Who will I be? And where have I really been rooting myself? He will start to show you, and you'll start to go, He'll show us the many places we've rooted that false sense of self, the lies, the cheap goods, and the fears that we've pinned our identity to. And then he will whisper to us this, that we are loved. And it doesn't have anything to do with anything. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that. He will whisper to us that we are loved. Always have been, are at this moment, always will be with an everlasting love. Let's pray. I don't know if we know it this morning, Lord. Maybe each of us knows it to different degrees and in a different way, but we are so blessed to be loved by you. All the world is spinning and turning and running, trying to find some handle to grab onto, to say, this might be life. This might be life. And you come and walk among us, Lord Jesus, and you tell us that you have the light of life and that you are happy to give it to us. You tell us that the Father has delighted to call us his children and that you no longer call us servants, but you call us your friends. And you invite us to come and rest our souls in you, to find the truth in you, to discover the boundless wonders of love in you. We look up and in our lostness and we say, Lord, who will we be? We don't even know the way out of the alley. And then you look down upon us and you say, do not be afraid, do not be afraid, for behold, I am making all things new.